impact would be. You have to remember the bill only extends jurisdiction of the board not to be able to discharge people for a certain amount of time. For aggravated murder, we have to retain jurisdiction for 30 years. But I think for a lot of the specially designated crimes, we would be retaining jurisdiction anyway for that longer period of time. It doesn't mean that we can't conditionally release, and we would be basically, this bill does not change the functioning of the board, and that's why the board's basically is pretty much in support of all of the changes.
Don't change anything?
No, because it doesn't change. We're much more concerned about what happens to the people once they're put under the jurisdiction, and do they get the treatment, and do we conditionally release them, and the monitoring system that we have on that. And because that portion of it's not changed, the treatment and the monitoring and ability to revoke people and send them back to the hospital is, I think, the essential part of the program. What happens to the people?
That's not affected by the bill.
That is
that's
not
intact.
Effective, except that you give the board a longer period of jurisdiction for the specially designated crimes, and the board is in support of that. The name change, the board is in support. You hear testimony either way on that. The board also is in support of changing the definition to exclude abnormalities constituted solely as a personality disorder. There's not going to be very many people affected by that because you're not going to find very many people where the testimony and the psychiatric reports are going to say that they're solely constituting personality disorders.
Just a bad person.
Pardon?
Like just a bad person.
Right. I mean, most people have all kinds of problems, and you're not going to find that many. The thing that we want to stress is that you be sure to put an effective date, because we need to make sure whether you're intending both on the issue of longer jurisdiction and not being able to discharge, give an effective date of January of 84 or whatever you want, but be sure to make it clear on the record that that would only affect people after this legislation. The trickier one is on the change in the definition of mental illness. And I was talking to Judy Snyder, who is our attorney member and the chairman of the board, this morning, and she's concerned about whether you really could make it retroactive or not make it retroactive. Once you have a different definition of mental illness, can you have a different, the old definition for the old people? The concern that we have is that if you change the definition, you have people now in the system, in the hospital, that are characterized solely as a personality disorder, and you, I assume, are not intending to then have us discharge those people. But it's going to be appealed either way. I'm sure the first case we get, we'll get an appeal on it. The other two very small, well, one of them is a major change, I think, is to amend the escape statute to allow us to prosecute somebody that is on conditional release and leaves the state. The reason that's very important is because presently, because we don't have a guilty plea, because we have a not responsible plea, we can't extradite people that leave the state. And so that's an essential part. And I think today you do have Lloyd Smith is here from the LADS, which is the state police computer system, and he'll be also very in support of that if he has time to testify. The last change is merely record keeping to have the state court administrator keep track of records. I have submitted some information on history and background and a rather long summary of statistics. Those statistics have been put together by Jeff Rogers and Dr. Joe Bloom, and they will give you pretty much all of the questions you might have in terms of how long we retain jurisdiction, who we keep, what crimes they commit, that sort of thing. But unless you have specific questions, I'll conclude my remarks.
Senator Brown.
The notion that changing the label will help in the treatment. Do you have any comment on that?
We have had, and there are a lot of occasions, where the patient at the hearing appears and starts making statements and basically trying to try their case over and says, well, I'm not guilty. I wasn't found guilty. I'm not responsible. I do understand the comments of Mike Swain saying that you'd probably find the same thing in the correction system, but the board is supportive of the change in the plea.
Second question. I noticed the list of aggravated offenses for which you could have longer jurisdiction. And without following any of that list, I don't see something like first-degree arson. I think...
No.
I think burning a dwelling house filled with people is a little bit more serious than attempted sexual penetration with a foreign object of second degree.
Well, the best response I have for that, and I made this comment in the House judiciary, is that originally those specially designated crimes were pretty much all Class A felonies and a couple of others. And my comment was that everybody has their own pet crimes, and that's exactly what started happening. Originally, the first thing they were going to have is only aggravated murder, and then that got extended logically to murder and then to sex offenses. The list can be as long or short as you want, and it changes with depending on what the preference of individual legislators is, but that's the list that the full House Judiciary Committee is now recommending, and we have no problem with the list.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hamby.
Felicia, do you foresee any change at all in the length of sentencing, length of time spent under this new provision?
I see no change in terms of how the board is going to react in terms of having people at the state hospital, because it does not prohibit the board from conditionally releasing people. Mm-hmm. So the system in terms of the board having a hearing and deciding whether or not somebody's appropriate to be conditionally released doesn't change. Mm-hmm. The only change is that for the specially designated crimes, if you get to the point where a person wants to be discharged from the board's jurisdiction, they can't be discharged for a longer period of time. So obviously some of those people are going to be in the system longer, but I don't think it's going to impact that many people. First of all, there's not that many crimes that are there in the list, and second, most of those people would be retained under our jurisdiction anyway. So you're only talking about the discharge and not conditional release. So I don't think there's going to be that much of an impact. Also, the Ways and Means Committee, when they approved my budget for the psych board, was aware of these changes, and although they hadn't been finalized here in judiciary, they pretty much said if there is going to be a physical impact, kind of an open invitation to go to the e-board, we're not going to know what the impact is for a while, because most of those people for these crimes have a very long period of time, and so the board's not going to be, they're not going to be considered for discharge for many years anyway. So I don't think it's going to impact us very much, and it won't be in the near future anyway. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Lloyd Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Lloyd Smith, with a manager of the Law Enforcement Data System, and my interest is basically in the paragraph dealing with the extradition of people who do leave the state who are under the supervision of the PSRB. Just basically wanted to impart some information, and that we do have several cases a year where people are found in other states, and essentially what is has to be told to the law enforcement agency that finds these people is that there's no authority in Oregon to extradite them, so they wind up turning them loose. Some people get found by two or three different agencies. I don't know that anybody is actually tracking them to find up or to find out what eventually happens to them, but our position is that a person who was found mentally incompetent can be just as dangerous either to a policeman or to a citizen in another state as a person who was found guilty, and that regardless of what happens to the rest of the bill, would like to see at least that section changed to allow for extraditing those people who are found in other states.
Thank you. Marcy Hertzmark.
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, my name is Marcy Hertzmark. I'm here representing the Metropolitan Public Defenders. I would like to present today just a few comments basically concerning statistics in order to back up some of the changes and some of the viewpoints that have been expressed today in generalities. We were able to pull from our files of the Metropolitan Public Defender, which is Multnomah in Washington County, for fiscal years 81 through 80 up to now, those cases which have asserted the defense of not guilty, not responsible. Of those cases, which it was only, the defense was only raised in 24 cases, In that same time period, we handled close to 6,000 felony cases. Only in 24 of them was this defense asserted at all. In every single one of those cases, we were successful. Not a single one of those cases came to trial. Every single one of them was disposed of by stipulation between the parties, that it was indeed an appropriate disposition of the case. Of the case files that we have, every single one of the dispositions, the supervision time, the disposition was indeed longer than it would have been if the person was in the custody of the Corrections Division, usually substantially longer. And we don't see that that would change under this bill. So it is, if this could be a sampling of what goes on within the state as a whole, there is no reason to believe that people are irresponsibly using the defense now, because it is usually not in the best interest of your client, unless it is obvious, as the stipulations indicate, that the person has a mental disease or defect. And that is usually the only time that most attorneys will indeed raise the defense. And I would be glad if the committee would like, I have all the case studies, the case histories, and I will be glad to Xerox them and distribute them to the committee, if it's your wish. I'm sorry, I didn't have them ready for today.
Well, if you could provide us with a copy, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, and I'll be glad to do that.
Donald Turner, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senators, my name is Donald Turner. I'm a professor of law at Willamette University. I'm appearing here on behalf of the American Civil Liberties Union in connection with House Bill 2075. I'd like to express some concerns which we have with the bill. We take no position at all concerning the provision that would expand the definition of escape in the second degree to include leaving while under the jurisdiction of the board and without its permission. The change in definition which excludes personality disorders is, while we may have some reservation about the general idea of defining criminal defenses in terms of a profession which has historically from time to time changed its own definition of those terms, I cannot communicate to you a terribly strong feeling on our part as far as that subject is concerned. As far as the change of the name of the defense is concerned, once more, I suppose you can't speak too vigorously in opposition to a provision which its supporters say has no substantive or procedural impact whatsoever. We would have no objection if you wanted to call it guilty, not guilty, in Alexander Alexandrovich Alekhine.
What's that?
Whatever series of nonsense syllables seemed appropriate. The phrase...
Are you making light of this bill?
Yes. I am making light of the policy of changing labels for cosmetic reasons. I am not making light of the fact that there may be some feeling on the part of the drafters that the change in the name would make it more palatable to those who oppose it. I'm not sure, however, that it is good policy for this legislature to indulge itself in that sort of PR. If, in fact, there are individuals out there who really differentiate between a not responsible verdict and guilty except for insanity, perhaps you could satisfy them by a plea of not criminally responsible, and then tell them that that doesn't mean that they're not morally responsible, not civilly responsible, other things. However, I do point out that if you propose to have a plea which differentiates depending upon the defense, as was suggested by an earlier speaker, it will then, for the sake of consistency, lead you into a number of other pleas. Not guilty by reason of self-defense, guilty except for defending one's wife, guilty except for entrapment, guilty except for renunciation, guilty except for being a school, museum, or library employee and charged with obscenity, and so on and on. Okay, I leave that subject. The fourth portion of the bill is deals with specially designated offenses, and with this we do have concern. The effect of it is to impose upon somebody who asserts an insanity defense successfully prohibitions that are not available, would not apply to him if he were in fact convicted of the crime and found to be guilty. A person who commits murder may at least apply to be discharged from probation. That privilege isn't given to someone who may have been mentally ill. We recognize that other individuals may change, and so we'll permit the court to terminate probation. We will permit the parole board to discharge from parole. It is only with those who are mentally ill or suffer from mental defects that we say, we'll conclusively presume that you still are mentally ill. We'll conclusively presume you're still dangerous, and we will permit the parole board. I mean, we will not permit the PSRB to make that sort of a determination. I think that's per policy. There may also be some constitutional problems in connection with this. I hardly need to point them out to you. I must in candor say it's my understanding that this morning the U.S. Supreme Court decided a case, United States versus Jones, which deals somewhat in this area. I understand that from the media, and I'm obviously not in the position to tell you what the court said. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There being no questions.
Thank you.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question?
Senator Frey would like to ask a question.
Just Don, when you were a district attorney, did you did they still have the right and wrong test in Oregon?
Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah.
For years. Yes.
And had it changed to the next step before you got out of office?
Yes.
Okay. So you
just said, barely.
Yeah, but all right. Well, I just.
The legislature also at one time, while I was in office, passed a bill to change it from McNaughton to the ALI test, which Governor Hatfield vetoed.
That's right. I just was wondering what your...
My position then was that the bill shouldn't have been vetoed. It's still my position that the ALI test is the appropriate test.
Well, that answers my question.
Yeah. Okay. We disagreed then also, I think. Senator Frey.
Hey, Mr. Chairman. And the constitutional problem that you raised.
I'm so unsure of the dimensions. I'm referring to equal protection, due process, under the Oregon Constitution, the Privileges and Immunities section, perhaps proportionality, and...
As regards those selected for treatment under three and those left out.
Yes.
Thank you.
Jeff Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeff Rogers. I'm a lawyer in Portland. I also work part-time on the faculty of the Department of Psychiatry at the Oregon Health Sciences University. I've been involved in studying this area of Oregon's insanity defense since 1975, and in the last 3 years I've been doing research with my colleagues at the Health Sciences Center. The Oregon legislature over the past 6 years has created an outstanding system, an excellent system, which as you've heard and know is working extremely well and has been cited as a national model by the American Psychiatric Association, by the National Mental Health Association on NBC News, by the California Psychiatric Association and elsewhere. If this legislature were to decide to do nothing to change Oregon's system, the legislature would have done a good job. with one exception. I think the only thing that's before you that I think is vital to change is the question of the escapes from Oregon, but I think everyone seems to agree on that. Other than that, the changes will have marginal impact. As to the specially designated offender category, I'm neutral to negative on that. I think there are some constitutional problems with it. However, there's strong feeling that the board should be given longer jurisdiction over such people so that if they should start acting up again, they can at least yank them back in.
Mr. Chair, could I ask a question?
Senator Hendricks.
Is there anything, and I maybe should ask the police this, but is there anything right now, if in their judgment they're uncertain about a person, from keeping them under their jurisdiction from 30 years now, if they think that individual requires their supervision?
The longest they can keep them now is the maximum period of time that they could have been sentenced if convicted.
Well, but aggravated murder is 30 years.
Correct. There is nothing to keep them from keeping that individual under their jurisdiction if they make a finding that they continue to have a mental disease or defect and continue to present a substantial danger. In doubtful questions, it's just a matter of evidence, factual.
So they can keep them under their jurisdiction up to the time that would have been the maximum sentence had they just been found guilty.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct. But if now they find that there is insufficient evidence to conclude that they're either dangerous or crazy, they are required by statute to discharge them.
Well, I thought when we reviewed that statute last time, it was up to that they had to prove by preponderance that they were no longer.
It depends on whether they are applying for discharge or whether it is a hearing which comes up automatically by statute as to who has to prove. But regardless of who has the burden of proof, the basic concept that if the evidence is insufficient to make whatever finding is required at that stage, then they have to discharge. Under the proposal, they would be required to maintain them under their jurisdiction, regardless of what the evidence showed concerning their dangerousness or their mental disease or defect. And as we have discussed with the House, that certainly presents the possibility of constitutional challenges. As to the personality disorder change, I think that would have marginal impact. Our research shows that only about 5% of those people under the board are agreed upon by all the experts to have only personality disorders. So it would eliminate perhaps 5 or so people a year from the board's jurisdiction. On the other hand, those 5 people or so tend to be the most controversial ones, tend to be the ones that create the most disagreements between the experts. And there is something to be said for excluding them by statute, although, of course, that will not avoid arguments about whether the person has a personality disorder or not.
Why is it that you're neutral to negative on the specially designated offenses?
Because I am concerned about constitutional challenges, for one thing, because I'm not...
Under the Reformation Clause?
Pardon me?
Under the Reformation Clause, or...?
No, mostly under the Equal Protection
Equal
Clause. I'm not sure there's a rational basis for distinguishing out the crimes that have been labeled as specially designated offenses. For instance, as Senator Brown mentioned, why do you choose some sexual crimes in the second degree versus assault in the first degree or robbery in the first degree?
The thing you really think that will strengthen this is the extradition right.
Yes.
And that you probably are either neutral or in favor of the Lloyd Smith was here testifying for, the record-keeping provision.
The record-keeping provision I'm also in favor of, yes.
Okay. The social... The personality disorder, minor impact, but you're okay, you don't mind it.
Correct.
In fact, it might even be a good idea.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
And... the suspect categories you're not too hot on, and the changing from to definitional change, you're sort of neutral on that.
The name change?
Name change.
I guess I have to support it since I came up with it.
I
think it is purely cosmetic. I think that's correct. I agree with everything that's been said about it. The question is, do you feel you need to change the name? If you feel you need to change the name for whatever reason, including the very heavy professional and political pressure following the Hinckley verdict, if you need, feel you need to change the name to make it easier to educate the public as to what this is all about, then I strongly support the name change proposed because I think it walks the line. It does not call a person guilty. Everyone gets a little hung up on the fact that it has that word in it. But remember, the verdict not guilty also has the word guilty in it. You have to think of it as a unit. If you think of it as a unit, then I think that, that logically it can be well justified. It's cosmetic. People will still call it not guilty. People will still say the same things they've always said. The impact of these changes is going to be marginal. But if you are going to change the name, I think that, for instance, going to guilty but insane very strongly risks losing the $2 million in Medicaid reimbursement. I think you can make a very strong case that guilty except for insanity is not a conviction. In fact, it's
You're going to have to argue it, aren't you?
We're going to have to argue it perhaps with a few bureaucrats in Washington, but I've reviewed the regulations, and I'm convinced that even they will see it as that. There's no substance change. The regulations say that if a person is under the penal system, that then they are not eligible for Medicare or Medicaid. And there's no question that these people are not under the penal system. They're going to be under the exact same system as they are now, which does give the treatment and the hospitalization and makes it impossible for them to ever go back under corrections as a result of that charge against them.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
I thought we might get this bill out.
I hope not.
Well, I thought we might improve it a little first.
I was just going to say, this
I think
is expensive.
Senator Hamby's first.
Brief point of clarification. Did I hear you correctly when you said, although their numbers are minimal, the five personality disorders currently perhaps incarcerated within Oregon, being deleted from the bill and consequently perhaps not receiving any treatment per se or follow-up by the Psychiatric Review Board does not bother you?
This would not allow, this would result in those people being convicted of crimes.
Mm-hmm. But they would no longer be followed by the board.
Correct.
They would not no longer, if treatment were recommended, they would not be receiving any treatment.
Except what, excuse me.
Although there are only five, you're not concerned.
Well, it's about five per year that are agreed upon. As I said to the House Judiciary Committee, I think there are some costs to taking out those personality disorders and putting them into prison. For instance, some sex offenders, pedophiliacs, might be agreed upon by all the experts to have personality disorders. And yet, if they're moved into corrections and into the prison, there's some question as to whether they'll get...
So they're incarcerated only and not treated?
Well, of course, there are some psychiatric treatment programs available in the penitentiary, the psychiatric ward, plus some individuals can be transferred to the hospital under the correctional treatment program. So the question is, I guess, evaluating whether those kinds of treatments available for those individuals are adequate compared to what's under the review board.
That was sorry. No, that was very brief. Senator Hendricks.
I was just going to make the observation that it seems, I don't know, there's not too much in this bill. It seems, I mean, you know, cosmetic surgery costing $2 million potentially to the state, depending on what the bureaucrats decide. People not getting treated, being put into the regular prison population when they have personality disorders. Although I do think that psychiatrists do not like to treat people with personality disorders because they're not good patients, so it's probably getting rid of some people they don't like to treat, but I mean...
That's part of the definition.
So you're just giving them the problem over to the corrections department to try to deal with when they don't have any, apparently, or very little capacity to treat them.
I have a brief question, Mr. Chairman. Senator Frye.
I wonder, do you have any thoughts on the idea suggested by an earlier witness that the jury be advised of the consequences of a finding of a mental defect?
I'm in favor of that.
That might be a good amendment.
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
I have written up a little wordy statement on this name change if people are concerned about that. I think it sets out the reasons, and if the chair would like, I'd be glad.
Pardon me?
I've written up a little blurb on the name change, if that is of interest to anybody.
Did we have a copy of that?
It's the least important thing, and it's the most controversial part of this book.
The assistant is coming to take you away. I mean, it away.
I was going to say, Doctor, before you leave, that we constantly use that. We say, you have a good claim, except for the fact the defendant is at judgment proof, except for the fact that the statute of limitation is run, except for the fact that the defendant has filed bankruptcy. You have a good claim.
Okay, thank you. Senator Hamby now moves that we delete from the bill as it came to us from the House the concept that is embodied in line 19 and 20 of page 1 of the House amendments dated June 13th, nor any abnormality constituting solely a personality disorder.
Is that right, Senator Hamby?
Well,
do you want to take this out of the bill so they will stay in the psychiatric security
I'd
board's jurisdiction?
Of course, to see them, you know, I was surprised to hear, and I understood him to be a physician from the Hill, not concerned, even though there are five. I still think if there's a possibility for treatment that they should be awarded that. I don't want to, I certainly don't want to jeopardize the bill in any way because I know there has been a lot of work in it.
Well, I tend to support your motion myself.
I would too.
Okay.
It won't be the only motion. So you're
there'll
not
be,
going to be accused of being the only person who made a motion.
Okay, grand.
Is there any objection to Senator Hamby's motion? If not, it's adopted. Now, the chair moves to delete, wherever it appears, the term guilty except for insanity. And the associated changes.